This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 27th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 166. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this special edition, listen to some of the sounds of 2020. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and the big deal feature. The end of year roundtable kicks around the top stories of British Columbia in 2020. Rewind to December 31st, 2019, the 20th anniversary of Y2K, the data disaster that didn't happen after all. It wasn't machines, but Mother Nature this time around. 2020 was a year that didn't want to begin. Was someone sending a signal? Exhibit A. Heavy winds hit Washington State and British Columbia on the last day of 2019, forcing many outdoor New Year's Eve parties to be canceled. The biggest was in Seattle at the Space Needle. Here is King 5 Seattle's coverage of New Year's at the Needle when the hosts broke the news and tried to put a happy face on the year to come.
Global New Year's at the Needle.
We have some news.
We can't figure out any way to make this happen.
I know.
Just the way we want it to.
You guys, the weather, it's just not going to work for the fireworks
not
tonight.
Not safe for fireworks.
But! No. But the spectacular light show is going to happen, so be ready for that. We have some really quick fun facts about the year 2020 because it's going to be a unique year for sure because it's a leap year. So you can look forward to an extra day in February 29th.
Valentine's, some other cool things.
Yeah, Valentine's Day is going to be on a Friday, which is a great date night.
Great date night. Cinco de Mayo is on a Tuesday, Taco Tuesday. It all makes sense now, doesn't
it? Yes. 4th of July is on a Saturday in 2020, and Christmas will be on a Friday, and maybe the best part, New Year's Eve
on a Thursday night, which means you get New Year's Day, Friday off, three-day weekend.
But right now, it is time.
It's almost time
to ring in 2020.
The year began with cross-country protests against a natural gas pipeline in northern BC. They called it Shut Down Canada. Factions of the Wet'suwet'en First Nation and their supporters blocked roads and railways. They even went to the BC legislature and tried to stop the throne speech in February. On March 4th, several youths staged a sit-in protest after meeting the NDP's Indigenous Affairs Minister.
And he stated that he will not stand with us. He will not exercise his power to ask Coastal GasLink to stand down. And so we are staying here until Coastal GasLink is removed from Wet'suwet'en territories, or we are removed from this building.
Pizza's not pipelines.
They were eventually removed by Victoria Police. They packed up their protest camp the next morning. On January 28th, Health Minister Adrian Dix and Provincial Health Officer Dr. Bonnie Henry briefed media for the first time on the novel coronavirus, which originated in Wuhan, China. Patty Hajdu, the Trudeau Liberal Health Minister, came to Vancouver on February 17th to support businesses in Chinatown that were suffering from cancellations due to the spread of the virus. Hajdu was asked why the Trudeau government was not stopping flights from China.
And the evidence says that when you shut down a border like that, it gets much harder to actually detect where people are coming from because people are determined to get into a country or a return home, and they will find alternative routes to do so. Secondly, the long-term implications of shutting down borders is one, they're not very effective in controlling disease, as in fact, they're not effective at all. And secondly, they actually long-term can create a greater risk to global public health. And here's why. China has been very open. Now, some will say, were they open enough and how fast were they open? But what we know is that within a week or so, they were letting the World Health Organization and therefore all of the partner countries know that they had an outbreak on their hand.
On March 11th, the World Health Organization declared a global pandemic emergency. But BC officials were slow to react. 2 days later, Friday the 13th of March, this is Dr. Bonnie Henry.
We're not talking about shutting down society here. It's still very safe today in BC, all across BC, to go out, to go shopping, to go to restaurants.
By March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, Dr. Henry changed her tune. It was now a crisis in BC.
We have taken the extra step of declaring a public health emergency in the province of British Columbia.
Here is Premier John Horgan.
It'll be the worst St. Patrick's Day ever, I expect, in terms of the hospitality sector, which depends on this day.
Solicitor General Mike Farnworth.
I am declaring a provincial state of emergency to support our provincial health officer and Minister of Health in swift and powerful response to the COVID-19 pandemic.
Politicians were staying home and using web conferencing platforms for meetings and events. But there were many bloopers, such as this one from a Vancouver City Council meeting. Someone didn't push the mute button.
Yeah, everybody, please mute your phones if you can, please.
And your toilets.
Councillor Dejanova, are you on the line?
Okay.
Councillor Fry?
Folks, we need everyone to mute your phones. We're hearing water in the background.
And giggling.
That's a nice way of describing it.
I know. I was trying to...
Someone is doing council business on the toilet.
For Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, a Zoom meeting with Kwantlen Polytechnic students was fraught with technical difficulties.
We're in our peace and culture that we're going to continue to make sure that you're getting the supports and that everyone gets the supports to be able to succeed in Canada and beyond. You used to bring some of Canada's and stories and
thank you, Prime Minister. I wish I did hear everything you said because of connection problems.
Yes.
But I pray that it was wonderful what you said.
I'm sure it was.
Just a second. I'm being told we're going to try and fix the system.
Edition number 137 on June 7th, 2020. The Breaker.News podcast dedicated the edition to the memory of Dermot Travis. Integrity BC's Dermot Travis, a watchdog whose voice became the most important in the post-Olympic BC, died of liver and heart illness on June 1st.
If you don't want to answer questions from the public, then don't run for public office. The same types of documents that you might want to access through freedom of information related to any type of financial transaction in any other part of government should apply to the legislature as well.
A one-off backroom special deal for the government of China, a country with one of the most deplorable human rights records in the world, being allowed to wine and dine our elected officials across British Columbia, and certainly they spare no expense.
Sean Holman is professor of journalism at Mount Royal University in Calgary.
Dermot meant accountability for British Columbia.
Vancouver's Wayne Crooks is the founder of Integrity BC.
Dermot focused upon the environment, human rights, and integrity in government. His lasting legacy in British Columbia is the electoral finance reform.
September 21st, Premier John Horgan ended weeks of speculation and called a snap election in the middle of the pandemic. Horgan ended the confidence and supply agreement with the Green Party and broke the fixed elections date law. The next election was supposed to be October 2021. But the gamble paid off as Horgan's NDP won a 57-seat majority.
John Horgan.
Andrew Wilkinson.
Sonia First now.
I believe the best way forward is to put the politics behind us. We're not just throwing money to try and buy votes. We're throwing money at people to stimulate economic activity, to keep them safe.
Andrew Wilkinson went big and bold. He promised to end the provincial sales tax for a year and then bring it back in phases.
It's a $6.88 billion issue that comes with the reduction of sales tax to 0% in the first year. But we believe that British Columbians will benefit from that by building confidence and getting people involved in the economy like never before.
Freshly chosen Green leader Sonia Firstenau put Horgan on the spot during the only televised debate of the campaign.
We put politics behind us. All three parties indicated and acted on ensuring that we were putting people first. We were putting the needs that people had to have met in a global pandemic first. That's what we should be doing right now. That's what we're not doing. We're here on the stage debating things when we should be in the legislature making sure people are getting what they need.
It's never a bad idea to ask British Columbians where they want to go and who they want to lead them.
It's a bad idea when you break an agreement and you break the legislation.
It was 3.5 years since the last election. That is an eternity with COVID-19.
It was a bizarre election campaign shaped by COVID protocols. BC Liberal leader Andrew Wilkinson held car rallies in Merritt and Richmond.
Here comes a truck. Tell me, are those logs on that truck? And is that a legitimate part of the British Columbia economy that needs to be protected and supported? Happy Halloween! Did anybody here get a pumpkin?
Wilkinson had to apologize for North Vancouver Seymour incumbent Jean Thornthwaite insulting the NDP's Bowen Ma during a virtual roast for the retiring Ralph Sultan.
Bowen is, you know, very pretty lady, and she knows that she's got it, and she knows how to get Ralph going.
What's done is done, and we have to make amends, and that's why I apologized 2 days ago, and that's why I'm, through Jane, extending the offer to speak with Bowen Ma if she sees fit.
After the devastating election loss, Wilkinson resigned. He did not take questions from reporters, but he did hold a caucus meeting, and the Breaker.News received a leaked recording of that meeting. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.news podcast. Year-end roundtable special edition. We look at 2020, the year that was, a reunion of the roundtable that convened after the polls closed on October 24th, the British Columbia snap election. We've got Alex G. Zakumas, a former broadcaster and writer. He is the CEO of a real estate business that straddles Canada and the USA. Aziz Rajwani of the Sutter School of Business and Langara School of Management. Cash Heed, former Solicitor General of British Columbia and former Chief of the West Vancouver Police. And Mike Klassen of the Vancouver Overcast podcast and BC Care Providers. First of all, go back into the time machine. Back to October 24th, that was the election night. Of course, the full results weren't known for a few more weeks, but that night we knew that it was going to be an NDP majority. John Horgan won his gamble, his pandemic election gamble. He divided and conquered the BC Liberals. But since then, BC has been hit hard by the second wave of the pandemic after he broke the fixed election dates law to get a majority. How will history judge John Horgan? Good decision for the party, bad for public health? Start with Alex.
Yeah, I think that for the most part, he'll be judged favorably. I think that, you know, people make an emotional connection. As I said, election night, people make an emotional connection with the people that they elect. Cash will know that as a former candidate and Solicitor General, and Mike will know that as somebody who worked on various campaigns. John Horgan is a very likable guy, and a lot of people who will try and pin this spike on the virus on him and on his government, I think the election may have contributed to it, no question. But do I think that we wouldn't have had a spike in the virus without an election? Hard to say. It's a double-edged sword when you try and answer that kind of question. So I think he'll be viewed quite favorably. I think his problem is that he's got a caucus where, you know, there's this there's this difficulty between, and let me assure you, there is a difficulty between the union folks and the Greens. And I think that's going to be more of a challenge for him than someone trying to pin a spike on the coronavirus on him. Nobody in the NDP told those idiots down at the beach when the weather was still good to go down there. No one told people to go down to Granville Mall and party their heads off. No one told people in Surrey and in other places to have a variety of different large-scale parties. That wasn't the NDP that told those people to do that. I blame those people only to a certain extent. Perhaps I shouldn't have characterized them the way I did, but people are frustrated. This has been a very difficult year, and people want to get out. They want to socialize. We are a social animal, and people are feeling constrained. And you know, is my life going to change and for the worse for permanently? These are the things that people are looking at, and I think that trying to blame Horgan and trying to blame the government, there's a very, very short fuse on that.
Yeah, Cash, what do you think? Good for the party, bad for public health?
Well, you know, let me just say, I don't want to repeat what Alex has said. He's articulated some of the reasons why, but I think Horgan's going to be judged on the 4 years going forward. There's nobody there to hold him in check anymore. We don't have the agreement in place with the Greens. We don't have this delicate balance of trying to govern the province. And, you know, an indication of what's going on with this pandemic money he wants to give out and the chaos around that, I think we're going to judge him based on the 4 years going forward. We know the coronavirus is here for a while. We know there is promise of a vaccination coming forward, but you know that's to be expected. But I think you've got to keep your eyes open over the next 4 years, because we have to ask our question, are the NDP going to go back to the old style NDP? And as Alex has pointed out, he's got this real division within his caucus of the hardcore union labor people and the others that are trying to be more moderate. So I think we've got to reserve judgment on this, but I think we have to look at this party. We look at Horgan, the premier, over the next 4 years. I think that's going to clearly define whether we truly have a new NDP contemporary model in place, or we have the old NDP that was hidden for the last 3 years.
Mike Klassen, can the BC Liberals be saved? Andrew Wilkinson was one and done, and Shirley Bond has taken over on an interim basis. A leadership election, leadership race is starting to bubble up. We'll know more about that in the weeks to come, early 2021. But can the BC Liberals as the Free Enterprise Coalition be saved, or is there going to be a new order out of the ashes?
You know, I thought after election night that things were on a bit of a knife's edge. Of course, we had that very brief 90-second statement by the now former leader, Andrew Wilkinson, that left more questions than answers. I thought it was really good, ultimately, that the party prevailed, the caucus prevailed, and chose and made it very clear to the leader that they needed to have an interim leader. I personally was hoping that they would put a strong woman parliamentarian in the role of leader on an interim basis. And I think they made the right choice with Shirley Bond. The thing about Shirley is she's maybe been there for a long time, but she puts the fear of God in pretty much everyone on the NDP bench. And she knows how to set the tone and the volume of her attacks and question period. There's probably very few people as good as her at that. I thought her shadow cabinet selections were actually on the money. I was pleasantly surprised that she herself took the seniors care and long-term care critics role. So having that very important to my line of work role as the critic was a really positive move. She's moved Stephanie Cadieu, another very, I think, competent and very likable, well-liked within the legislature as the caucus chair. Mike Bernier, who I think perhaps had some, may still have some of his own leadership aspirations, coming in as finance critic, has come out, I think, out of the gate fairly well. Peter Millamar, I'm kind of reading off all the positives. You asked me about what their fortunes going forward. I was feeling fairly negative, and I have to admit, one of the party's problems is that the gas tank is empty right now. They haven't really got a lot of good candidates out there in the offing. They have to do the work at the local level. You know, usually you start finding people who've been city councillors or mayors and move them into the ranks of MLA. There's just not a very deep well right now. The party got a little bit too old and gray, so they need to do that work at the local government level. And so we'll see what happens. As for the leadership, you know, I'm hearing some good names, to be honest. You know, you can sort of complain all you want, whether you're bringing back some of the old guard, the Kevin Falcons, or have Michael Lee or Todd Stone or any others that come forward. I think it'll probably give some energy to the organization in a way, hopefully, like it didn't happen last time, which I ended up dividing the party and resulting in perhaps not the best choice in the end. So I remain a little bit optimistic. And as far as the NDP, I agree with Alex and Cash's assessment. They're really going to be judged on the next 4 years, and not so much what happened during the election time and during the pandemic. Hopefully, we come out the other side of this. We're seeing some glitches with recovery benefit and other issues that are percolating to the top. Von Palmer doing a great job hammering away on the Site C issue. So we'll see how the party fares. As you point out, it's really hard to wrangle a caucus of 50 plus MLAs, and it's going to be a real challenge for the leader to try and hold that all together throughout his term.
Aziz Rajwani, the economics of the pandemic, there is going to be a legacy for so many years. Of course, the legacy of the lives lost of 2020, but also in 2020, government spending at every level, but especially here in the province of British Columbia, where we saw the government go from a balanced budget to a matter of weeks, well into the red, and now we're looking at a deficit well over $13 billion. How is the NDP going to deal with this in 2021 and going forward? They got four years to deal with it now. How are they going to clean up this mess?
Well, you know, the pandemic has resulted in expenditures that are absolutely necessary to be incurred. There are individuals that are suffering out there beyond what I can even imagine. Small business owners, entrepreneurs who poured their blood, sweat, and tears into businesses and through no fault of their own, through no mismanagement of their own, are being told to shut down. Government is dictating to them what hours they can stay open, what they can do, et cetera, all these kinds of things. It's unprecedented. So you're going to have, obviously, there is a need to spend the money, but what you've got to do, governments have to make sure that they're targeting that spending in areas that are really needed, as opposed to just making it universal benefits in nature. Make sure you get the money out to the individuals and businesses that really need it. Don't make it universal that anyone can apply for those benefits. But furthermore, there's going to be increased spending and required increased spending over the next decade. It's going to take a decade to get out of this mess. And what we really and truly need, therefore, are more financial watchdogs. Whether those financial watchdogs are from the private or public think tank infrastructure, or whether they're mandated by law. And that's what I would like to see, is laws that strengthen the powers of financial watchdogs. So for example, in British Columbia, we have the Auditor General, obviously, and the Auditor General by law is required to report on what we as accountants call value for money auditing, whether monies that were spent were economically spent, efficiently spent, and effectively spent. And that needs to happen in all government programs going forward, because politicians by their nature will just spend the money and say, well, we needed to spend it because of the pandemic. But are those expenditures, were they needed? Did they achieve their objective? That's what auditors need to do. And you need to strengthen the role of auditors and Parliamentary Budget Office, for example, federal. We don't have a provincial Parliamentary Budget Office. It's time for that. Selena Robinson, who was the Minister of Municipal Affairs, but now the Minister of Finance removed the Auditor General's watch over municipalities like the City of Vancouver, et cetera. And I think that needs to be brought back in, not to restrict what governments can do, but to make sure that money is being spent properly, that it's not just being thrown around hoping that it sticks. And good public policy and good financial public policy has to ensure that that happens. So I think we need to strengthen, whether it's by law or citizens demand it, that there needs to be more financial watchdogs looking over government spending and making sure that money is being spent properly, effectively, efficiently, and economically, as I say, the triple E.
Now, the next segment is about municipal politics here in British Columbia. Vancouver, Surrey, and Victoria, the three most important cities here in British Columbia, there were crime spikes during the pandemic. Meanwhile, the opioid crisis and homelessness, both those tragedies show no end. All three cities have grappled with budget crises due to the pandemic recession. I want you to rate the performance of Mayor Kennedy Stewart of Vancouver, Mayor Doug McCallum of Surrey, and Mayor Lisa Helps of Victoria. We'll go one by one to rate the performance of these three politicians. First, Alex Zakumas.
Well, I supported Kennedy Stewart in the last election. It's no secret I'm a former director of the NPA, and Kennedy would not be aligned with the NPA, to say the least. But I think the NPA's changed a fair bit, mostly for the worse. But anyway, I supported him. I thought he did wonderful things with social housing in Burnaby, and when he was an MP, and I was attracted to his no-nonsense policies when he was running, and I think he's a decent man, and I think he's been dealt a tough hand. Yeah, he's made some mistakes. He's made some very serious mistakes, but I would give him a B+. I think that he's done the best that he can under the circumstances. He's certainly got a divided council. It's too bad that the NPA isn't more together, because, you know, the Greens on council and one or two of the others are just a nightmare. And they've forgotten why they're there. They've forgotten that you have an obligation to the basics, right? Collecting garbage, fixing potholes, making sure that you're keeping taxes low. You know, and I think the mayor is hamstrung by a lot of people on council and behind those people who just don't care. This road pricing is just insanity. Even to raise it is stupid. You know, these guys are just extremists. They want to injure you because you're driving a car. Well, you know, the majority of people driving cars where they want a road price are taking their kids to school or to activities, taking their parents to doctors, and committing to commerce from one side of the city to the other. So that will kill business in that area, and it'll injure a lot of people that they claim they want to help. So I'd give Kennedy Stewart a B+. Surrey, Doug McCallum, F. I don't know if I could give him a lower mark. He has jacked up prices. He is run by, the de facto mayor is Bob Cima, let's be honest. His biggest backer financially and otherwise. So, you know, Doug McCallum will do whatever Bob tells him to do. And this is terrible. We didn't have it under Diane. We didn't have it under Linda. We didn't have it under Bob Bowes. The reason Doug won is because Tom Gill and Bruce Hain decided that they were going to play silly bugger, and the Surrey First imploded. Otherwise, you wouldn't have had Doug McCallum or his team elected. But his team is split. You know, just the increase in taxes alone, well over 12%, it's just insanity. That's killed Surrey as the most attractive place in the Lower Mainland to invest in. And so McCallum will get an F, and there's certainly questions about. You know, what he's doing personally, and is that Is that a conflict of interest? You know, these are all questions he refuses to answer. Lisa helps. I mean, I don't know who she helps, but it's certainly not the city of Victoria. I'd give her a D, only because I think she's well-meaning, but she's certainly ground Victoria to a halt. You're starting to see, you know, huge interest in the West Shore, Colwood, Langford. Langford's become the most popular place to invest in all of Western Canada. And thanks to Mayor Lisa Helps and her backwards council. They tore a page out of Gregor Robertson's book that, you know, bike lanes and BS are the way to go. And it's just not the case. You've got to be able to deliver something else as well as that. They haven't been able to deliver anything on any other file. You know, I lived in Victoria when I was a young aide during the social credit, and you know, the city has changed dramatically in those decades. But since Lisa Helps and her crew have taken over Victoria, I mean, it's just become a nightmare, despite the development. But hopefully with Stephen Andrew now on council, things will improve. He's an excellent addition to council, and he certainly brings a strong message with him.
And now Aziz Rajwani, through the lightning round, let's get the ratings from you for Kennedy Stewart, Doug McCallum, and Lisa Helps.
So I'm going to rank them relatively as opposed to with an absolute grade. So I'm going to use Clint Eastwood's vernacular, good, bad, and ugly. So the good, the bad, and the ugly. So in this case, I would say Kennedy Stewart is good, but good doesn't necessarily mean it's a very good grade, because one of Rafe Mayer's axioms was you don't need to be a 10 in politics. You can be a three as long as the opposition's a two, right? So good goes to Kennedy Stewart, bad would go to Lisa Helps, and McCallum would unfortunately have to be ugly. We also, though, have to realize that when it comes to the three branches of government, municipal, provincial, and federal, at times like these, it's a municipal branch that has the toughest times because they're constrained by the amount of money they can raise by their budget, requirement to balance the budget, et cetera. They have, maybe if you're driving a six-speed car, they can only exercise two of those gears. Provincial government can exercise four of them, and the federal government can exercise all six of them. So they have the most power to borrow, spend, things of that sort. So they're always going to end up looking better than the municipal politicians in times like this, because they can spend, you know, whatever they want. They can issue bonds to raise that money. There's no limits financially on them. On municipal governments, there are various constraints that are placed on them. And, you know, during an emergency like this, or a pandemic like this, municipal politicians really are going to come out, you know, with top grades. But on a relative basis, I would put him first, Lisa Helps second. So good, bad, and ugly definitely has to be McCallum. Because, you know, what I find amazing is that every time someone wants to get elected, they always talk about transparency. Always. Doesn't matter what stripe government wants to get elected. When in opposition, they always talk about transparency. They'll provide, you know, they'll communicate better with the citizenry, et cetera, et cetera. Once they get into power, all those things change. I have absolutely no idea why. Maybe one day we'll have the technology to put ex-politicians, you know, put something on their head, and we'll get a feeling of what exactly happens from being in opposition with all these promises to then getting elected and doing exactly the opposite in certain times, or shutting down, you know, the access to information. Things of that sort, when in opposition, they were constantly saying that they would increase access to information, et cetera. And you know that through all the work that you do. But to me, maybe one day there will be this technology. We'll just have to put this over someone's head once they become ex-politician and see what exactly is going on there to make future politicians better.
And Mike Klassen.
Well, we heard the good, bad, and the ugly from Aziz, and we got some letter grades from Alex. I think that all of them have a bunch of work to do. Doug McCallum is an unusual anomaly in the fact that he came from the political wilderness as a retired mayor and now came back. And it's been interesting to watch that council climb its way through all of these issues, including the biggest issue for them, which is the replacement of the RCMP with a Surrey police force. I don't know what to make of it. I'm not in Surrey, and the people I talk to in Surrey sound frustrated. But will McCallum be able to make his way through the next 2 years and have that Safe Surrey Coalition survive is really an open question. I think that that huge tax increase, and he positioned it as a 2.9% tax increase, but in fact it became a with a fee to per house fee of $300, it became a significantly larger amount of money that was probably on balance going to be more harmful to low income and seniors. So I don't know how well that's going to stand for him. Just before I go to kind of ranking them all, Lisa Helps seems to be almost the very embodiment of where Victoria politics is right now. I agree with Alex that having Stephen Andrew come on council might lead to some changes in the tone. But, you know, Victoria loves its green, sleepy, you know, activist councils. They seem to be part and parcel with the city. And amazingly, I heard Lisa Helps being described as part of the moderate wing of council. And I think, you know, by outside of Victoria, she might be seen as more of a green activist. Kennedy Stewart, I think, is maybe started off well and has found himself on shakier ground. I judge him based upon his own goals for what he wants to do. He wants to deal with the homelessness issue, he wants to deal with housing, and he wants to deal with the opioid crisis. None of those files really are making any substantial progress. And the fact that the mayor continuously goes to name dropping is a way of a measure of his political success. The fact that he's talking about meetings that he's having or calls he's having with the PMO don't really matter a jot if he's not getting the money and he's not getting the work done. So I think that there is a broad frustration at how things like the Strathcona Park issue have been dealt with. The fact that the mayor has not been working collaboratively at all with council. I talk to people in council who tell me that they never are even given a heads up about half the things that he brings forward. He's often taking some of their motions and their work and trying to reform it as his own. But that's the kind of thing that just breeds mistrust on council. So it's no wonder to me that there's some dysfunction there. And of course, now we're seeing Sadu Johnson, who has a very interesting background in terms of how he got in. He was brought in under the Vision term as the second in charge to Penny Ballum. He's now retiring in January, leaving an opening in the city manager position that I think will be absolutely vital. I would love to see a return to form in that office where you bring somebody up who's been brought up and grown up in the ranks of the civil service, rather than bringing an outsider like we seem to have done with all the major management positions of the last few years. So I think that seeing a strong person, perhaps a woman leader back at City Hall would be, I think, a really good thing to see. So I'll be watching for that. So I'm going to give all of them pretty low scores, with the hope that in the next 22 months of the next election, they have a chance to turn it around. But I do feel like all three cities are not living up to their potential. The last column, I should just point out, that I wrote for Vancouver Courier before they closed down the newspaper, which was just in the week prior to the declaration of the global pandemic. The title was Vancouver needs to focus on the economy as part of the COVID recovery. And it really was, that should be the goal. The goal should be try to figure out how you can mobilize staff to help these businesses that are struggling right now, not continue to have these permit waits and these these things that penalize businesses in for trying to keep open. Help them, help support our local economy. That's the way that the city is going to, all the cities are going to be able to ultimately help the citizens that they represent.
And finally, Cash Heed.
Well, let me start at the top. Let me talk about Lisa Helps. And I use a comparison of Lisa in her first 4 years to where she is right now. And I'm going to give her a B rating. And let me just explain why. And I think Mike has covered a lot of it. Victoria is kind of unique in its culture and the mayors that they do have and the council members that they do have. So compared to her first 4 years, I think she's done a decent job in the next 2 years of her mandate there in Victoria. So I think she's matured, in a, if I can use that term. I think she's a lot more developed in her politics on dealing with some of the situations in Victoria. Of course, we don't like to see the homelessness that's going on there and some of the other issues. But again, Victoria is unique. That whole capital region is somewhat unique. I think there has to be some amalgamation in that capital region. And hopefully we can have a municipal mayor that's going to drive some of that. I'm not that optimistic about it, but I think she's done a decent job, so I'm going to give her a B. Mayor Candy Stewart, I'll tell you, I've got to give him a C. And the reason is, I think he dropped the ball on quite a few things. Mike mentioned a few. I know Alex has supported him, but I'll tell you, with some of the issues that he's been playing, some of the cry wolf, and we've heard him do that cry wolf so many times on whether it's the housing issue, whether it's the police issue, whether it's the opioid crisis issue, no, a number of issues where he's actually done that, whether it's even the pandemic. And I think he's really confused a lot of his governance at the municipal level with the governance that he had, or not even governance, but his position when he was in the federal part of it. I had a lot of hopes for Kennedy Stewart, and you know, I would publicly support him during the election, but I tell you, I'm disappointed, so I'm going to give him a C. Doug McCallum, triple F. I have never seen a politician so chaotic as this particular individual. Not only is he lost any charisma around that whole aura of a mayor, but he is a disheveled individual that not only in his appearance, but in his actions certainly amplified. He's made a complete and chaotic mess of the transition of the Surrey Police Service to the extent where I don't think it's going to survive. I think there's so many issues. On all of the taxation issues, you know, we've heard it. I'm not going to repeat that. But just how council is run. You've got this vote that continues to be just 5-4, 5-4. So there's that one vote. And Mike alluded to the fact it'd be interesting to see how long he can hold that coalition together. But that guy is a triple F, in my humble opinion.
Alex G. Zakumas, a former broadcaster and writer. He is the CEO of a real estate business that straddles Canada and the USA. Aziz Rajwani of the Sutter School of Business and Langara School of Management. Cash Heed, former Solicitor General of British Columbia and former Chief of the West Vancouver Police. And Mike Klassen of the Vancouver Overcast podcast and BC Care Providers.
We're all in this together. And we've got to brave this stormy weather.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to those who are making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Daryl Plekis and Alan Mullen. If not for Premier John Horgan and Dr. Bonnie Henry, they would be the newsmakers of 2020. Ex-clerk Craig James was charged with breach of trust and fraud on December 18th, the week after Plekis's explosive unfinished business report on his 3 years as Speaker. Here are clips from my interview with Plekis and Mullen.
Are there good people at the legislature? You bet there are. Of course, there's fantastic employees, there's fantastic people in elected office, but it doesn't take very many bad ones before you create a situation where you have what Alan and I would describe as a corrupt organization and facilitated in part, never mind all the other things, they themselves are contributors to the facilitation of corruption. They make it easy because of their behavior. And somebody needs to say, stop it, get out of the building, get out of office. And thank God a few of them were walked off the property in the last election by taxpayers.
To me, what I saw was
not sort of an independent press gallery. Like, my expectation coming in, sort of off the street, was that, you know, you better be careful what you do or say here, because, you know, they will just report it as they see it. Not even close. Not even close, Bob. With the exception of, you know, a couple such as yourself. What I saw was a total and utter manipulation of almost every story. That is the People's House. That place should be a glass house. We need transparency. I've been screaming it from the rooftops. Mr. Plexus has been screaming it from the rooftops. And my question is, why aren't the people in that building screaming it from the rooftops? And how do we get there? Well, we get there by just this. Be transparent. Be open. Be honest. So you know, I'm not giving up on that. I know Mr. Plexus isn't either.
My guess is that almost every single British Columbian cares about corruption. They want good government. They don't want corrupt government. And they want their government to take care of people. They want them to be helpful to them. And most of all, a government should be say, you know what, we're first in line to undo a wrong. We're first in line to make sure that somebody gets justice. And somebody needs to say to those people in that building in Victoria, do it. Start making sure that people get justice, and start doing things. And we're not talking stuff which is hard to do. They can do this in a nanosecond. The whole response to the coronavirus should tell us that when governments want to do something, need to do something, they can do it in a nanosecond. They need to do that now.
For the full feature, find the headline, Plexus and Mullen Unleash a Blizzard During a Talk in the Snow. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 27th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on December 27th in 1979, the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan, which led to the boycott of the Moscow 1980 Olympic Games and many, many more atrocities over the next four decades? Now you know. Send me your feedback and send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. That's patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. Onward to 2021. Sure, love brings us peace.